Hi, this is Becca Tarnas.
And I'm Rick Tarnas, and we're really looking forward to teaching an upcoming workshop here at Astrology Hub on September 21st.
If you want to be the first to know when registration opens, make sure you're signed up for the Cosmic Insider at astrologyhub.com/insider.
We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi there and welcome. This is Amanda, the founder of Astrology Hub, and you're listening to our Week Ahead Snapshot with world-class astrologer, historian, and author of the Cosmic Calendar, Christopher Renstrom. This show is designed to give you a quick overview of the week ahead, enabling you the gift of choice in how you navigate and weave these energies into your daily life. Enjoy.
Hello, my name is Christopher Renstrom, and I'm your weekly horoscope columnist here on Astrology Hub. And this week, I wanted to talk to you about Mars entering the zodiac sign of Gemini on August 20th. Now, everyone always gets a little fretful whenever Mars enters a zodiac sign. Pretty much known as the planet of gumption and drive, Mars is that part of our astrological chart that gets up and runs after what it wants, with no ifs, ands, or buts. Also, without once saying please, thank you, or pardon my reach. Mars is the planet that makes sure that we accomplish the things that we set out to accomplish. Now, it could be argued that different planets also suit that purpose in their own different way. Venus may accomplish what it wants by partnering with someone else. The sun may accomplish what it wants by just entering the room and showing off itself. The moon might accomplish what it wants by being nurturing and suggestive. So each of the planets has their own way of accomplishing what they want. But Mars is the planet of gumption and drive. And when it targets something, it's going to go after it. And it really doesn't care about what the consequences of its actions are. Now, in astrology, Mars entering the sign of Gemini is kind of generally understood to be a kind of lightweight Mars, all right? It's not going to be aggressive and butting heads like a Mars in Aries, and it's not going to be thundering and loud like a Mars in Sagittarius, nor is it going to be stealthy and sneaky and vindictive like a Mars in Scorpio. Mars in Gemini is generally seen as being rather playful and upbeat, a kind of easy to get along with Mars. Well, obviously, some people never read the story of Cain and Abel from the book of Genesis in the Bible. That tells you a lot about what Mars in Gemini can be. Now, all the air signs are associated to relationships in some sort of way. Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius, these are the three air signs in astrology. Gemini rules over our earliest sense of relating, which is basically a sibling. That's the person who was older than you or younger than you, the one you played with, the one that you got into fights with, the one you got into fits and squabbles, the one that you made up a secret language, the one you finked on, and the one you went to when you felt like there was nobody else that you could possibly entrust with a confidence or something that had gone on. So siblings play a very powerful role in our early development. And of course, not everyone was raised with a sibling, but if it wasn't a sibling, like an older or younger brother or sister playing that role in your life, there was probably a playmate or best friend who lived next door or down the block who also would have played that role. Libra, of course, is all about partnering and especially partnering in terms of spouses or marriage, but it can also be partnering in terms of business or a relationship that isn't sanctified by marriage or described by a marriage, but it's basically one-on-one partnering. It doesn't have the familiarity of Gemini because you partner with someone who is outside your home. Okay, and so this is the notion or the idea of Libra. And then Aquarius, of course, is the zodiac sign that deals with you within the group. It's sort of the most political of all the air signs because it's always sort of putting out its feelers for consensus. Who's being being heard, who's not being heard, and what can we do to sort of bring the group together on this agreed upon action. So Aquarius is very other oriented, but not in a one-on-one way necessarily per se, but more in terms of like, how's this going to affect the group? And of course, when we're talking about Aquarius, we're talking about those relationships outside of the home. So really, when you think about the three air signs, Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius, the only one that really deals with the home or growing up within a home, within a family, is really Gemini. The other two, Libra and Aquarius, their gaze is outside the home. The emphasis is on relationships that are outside the home, people that they've yet to meet, people that they did not grow up with. And so there isn't this kind of supposition that everyone is supposed to be on the same page when you deal with those two air signs. But with Gemini, well, there is that idea of being on the same page or at least holding the same coin. But as we know, coins have flip sides. There are heads and there are tails. You flip a coin and you call it and you say heads or tails. Well, this is something that Geminis really understand and know, that Geminis always know that there is a flip side to any sort of situation, there is a flip side to any sort of personality. So everything that Gemini, and particularly Mars in Gemini, learned about how to get your way or how to get the things that you want to get in life, everything a Gemini learned along those lines was learned in the playground, or on the playground, rather. Okay, so how you won a game or how you lost a game, the way that you made friends through play, or the way that you were rejected by people through play because you didn't play well or you didn't want to play the games that they wanted to play. Everything dealing with socializing, with cooperation, but in terms of a playground, or let's go further, in terms of a sandbox, okay, this is where the Geminis basically learned how to do all of these things. Do you go and graciously invite someone to come and play because you're curious as to who they are and you want to break the ice? If you're flustered and angry and someone beat you at your own game, or they're not playing in the way that you like, do you pick up your things and do you depart the sandbox in a huff? Okay, all of these things are basically ingrained in the astrological sign of Gemini. Again, it's the idea of winning and losing, but it's not winning and losing like in an Aries way. You know, with Aries, I always think of a Roman Colosseum, you know, and it's like the gladiators going at it with one another and the emperor deciding at the end whether it's thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, and so you're it's blood and sand, Spartacus, you know, you're fighting for your life and you're, you know, very shortly clipped loincloths and your swords and your sweaty bicep. Anyway, well, the gladiators going at it. Okay, that seems to be a sort of Marsy combative sort of thing, but as understood through the zodiac sign of Aries. But in Gemini, it's more about playing a game. Okay. And yes, there are people who are sore losers and there are people who are really obnoxious winners. But for the most part, especially what you see in the zodiac sign of Gemini is like, oh, that was a fun game. Let's play again. Okay. So there's a kind of bonhomie that's sort of inscripted into the zodiac sign of Gemini. And really what that comes from is Mercury. Mercury is the ruling planet of Gemini, and it's the planet that rules the mind. A lot of times people say, oh, Mercury is the sign of communication and it rules the mind and it can be analytical, which I find to be all terribly dull explanations or descriptions for the zodiac, for the astrological planet Mercury. Mercury is your wit. Okay. Mercury is your cunning. Mercury is the way that you size up a situation. It's the angle that you're going to play. You know, it's going to be the way that you entreat people. And it's going to be the way that you dismiss people, but you're always doing this in order to get from here to there. So there's a very playful quality to Mercury. And of course, Mercury is about buying and selling and wheeling and dealing and all these sorts of things. And as far as Mercury is concerned, you know, the smart person is the person who wins the deal, and the stupid person is the one that could be had. So you kind of take this idea of smart or stupid, the person who wins the situation and the person who was had, and you want to introduce, in order to understand Mars and Gemini, you want to introduce a Mars energy to that. Okay, so where Mercury's relationship, for instance, to a game might be a crossword puzzle. You know, I read the clues and figured out X amount of things across and X amount of things down and things like that. And that was a fun puzzle. And I'm flipping the page and going on to the next thing, which a lot of times could be Mercury's relationship to game or gaming, all right? When you throw a Mars energy into that, it's gaming with an edge, okay? So it's a gaming with a sense of wanting to win, okay? But also being really good at the rules, being really good, knowing the rules so well that you know how to sort of bend the rules, you know how to sort of improvise on the rules, you know how to sort of get around a rule. So what you want to sort of think of with the Mars and Gemini is to bring in the Mercury wit with the Mars sense of mission, okay? And all missions, as far as Mars is concerned, are meant to be accomplished. So there can be a kind of, I'm going to engage in this wordplay or this game, and I'm going to do my best to win it. Okay, Gemini, to begin with, is a competitive sign. It's sibling rivalry. And as I referred to earlier, the first murder, unfortunately, in the history of our civilization as we know it, you know, pretty much everyone goes back to the first murder, which takes place in the first book of the Bible, which is the book of Genesis. That is based on sibling rivalry. You have Adam and Eve. They have two children. They have two sons. The oldest is Cain, and the youngest one is Abel. And this is a period of time where God is still walking on the earth, even though he's dismissed Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden. He still talks to them in the sort of conversational way. And so these two sons of Adam and Eve grow to, you know, young fellows. And Cain, as I said before, was the older one, and Abel was the younger one. Now, Cain is a farmer, and he works really hard to, he works really hard at the earth to produce something. And Abel is a shepherd. He keeps flocks. And both of them come one day and make sacrifices to God. Cain shows, you know, what he's produced from his hard farm work, the fruits of his labor. I mean, that's literally where that comes from, right? And then Abel shows, sacrifices the fatty parts of the lamb or whatever, and, you know, with that sort of roasting aroma and things like that, you know, and God is very pleased with Abel's sacrifice and shows him favor. And one can't imagine, like, how exactly did God look at Cain in that moment? You know, like, obviously he's very pleased with Abel and he's praising it, but then he gives Cain this look, and it must have been some sort of look, because God then says to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it." So, and this always struck, ever since I was a little kid, this part of the story always stayed with me. And it was kind of like my first moment of, like, you know, I don't, you know, in my Catholic faith, where I was just sort of, I found myself, you know, asking, is it a sin to question God's parenting abilities? And I took that very seriously, because I was thinking, that's not really good parenting ability right there. I mean, first of all, you know, if you're God and your infinite wisdom, you're not really going to show favoritism. That's that's not a good idea, okay? And then to sort of like look at the person who lost and then, you know, who didn't gain the favor. I mean, it's kind of bad enough showing favoritism, but then to look at the other person and say, why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? You know, if you do what is right, then you'll be rewarded. But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. I mean, talk about like taking it to the nth level right there, you know, and waiting, you know, to take advantage of you. And then that also sat a little bit difficultly for me too, because it made me wonder, well, did God have foreknowledge of what Cain was going to do? And was he sort of warning him about darker thoughts or something like that? So it always made me sort of go back to this text wondering, like, did it really have to go there? Okay, so... And of course, it does go there, you know. Cain and Abel, they're the first siblings. Cain invites Abel out into the fields, and Abel, you know, comes along, and Cain kills him right there on the spot. And he does it out of anger and out of rivalry. He wants to win God's favor, and he thinks that winning God's favor is to kill his brother, although I always thought that that was a little bit, I think he just wanted to kill his brother, okay? And that's just where it was coming out. It's like children on a playground. I mean, they hit one another, and they're not always aware of, like, you know, what that can happen. Now, I'm not saying that children go and slay one another on a playground or anything like that, but children don't always understand how they can cause pain or hurt or whatever. And again, these are one of those things that's worked out on the playground. I mean, there are children who never wake up to that and just turn into monstrous beasts. And then there are other children who actually realize, I hurt someone's feelings, or I hurt someone in play, or I laughed a little bit too loudly when I won that game. And so I'm full of remorse. And now I'm going to go back and apologize or make amends or make sure that we're all right. Or I remember the pathetic thing I used to do when I was a wee tot. You know, I would hit someone, they would cry or whatever. And I would be like, hit me. I'd beg them to hit me. I'd be like, hit me. And they'd be like, hit me. And I'd start crying too. It didn't hurt that much, but I'd start crying too, just to sort of show that I was sharing this thing. I mean, all of this goes to say is that Gemini is where we learn this give and take. Gemini is where we learn, you know, not to hurt someone, not because it's prohibited, but because it causes someone pain and it's really a dreadful thing to witness. So you don't do this. And this is where we all work this out. We all work this out on the playground. We all work it out as children. But that's not what happens in this story. Cain acts out and he takes out his brother. But what I find fascinating about this, it was always the line that stayed with me. You know, God then, you know, meets Cain, who's coming away from the field, and he says something like, where's your brother? And Cain replies, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? And that was always so snide. There was always something like flippant about that remark. It's like, I don't know, my brother's keeper. I don't know. There is something like snide and mocking about that sort of thing. And that's where you kind of, you know, I mean, like Cain slew his brother. That's pretty bad. But then that on top of it was like, ew, you're just really kind of like not cool. Okay. So God obviously like says, you know, the ground is weeping with your brother's murder or whatever like this. And he exiles Cain and Cain is afraid for his life or whatever. And God throws him out. I mean, I guess Cain didn't do the math of like, if you're going to ask God, am I my brother's keeper? Are you really expecting God to be your keeper after you've like killed your brother? Okay. But that's all worked out right there. Anyway, why am I digressing in all of this? The reason I'm going into this kind of digression, just to sort of map this on out, is that Mars in Gemini is, as I was saying before, it's about play and it's about game playing, but it's done with an edge. Okay. It's done with an edge. Mercury makes the mind very sharp. It makes the words very biting. It can make someone say, my brother's keeper. I mean, think of that flip remark, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a kind of distancing from pain that can be done, or bad things that can be done. And sometimes this can be justified by, well, we were just playing a game, you know, and things got out of hand and, you know, that's what happens and, you know, sorry. And let's go back to, okay, things can get out of hand that way, or it can be like, we're playing a game and there are winners and losers and you lost. And so, sorry, next. I mean, it can be like that. So this is where game playing goes from something that's fun and playful and engaging, and it can become more about beating someone, but then justifying it behind the rules of the game. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, someone wins a game, fine, but do you have to go and humiliate them? Do you have to go and rub their nose in it? Do you have to, you know, win over and over and over, and you get absorbed at that, you know, with beating your opponent, and this is something that you sort of like glorify in? Okay, this is where Mars in Gemini kind of has to watch it, okay, where it can go a little bit too far, as they say, or we were often told as kids growing up, it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt. So that's something that I want you to keep in mind. And the reason I want you to keep in mind is because Mars is going to be in the zodiac sign of Gemini for a very, very long time. Usually when Mars enters a sign, it's there for about maybe 6.5 or 7 weeks. It's in and out and it moves on to the next zodiac sign. But Mars enters Gemini on August 20th, but then turns retrograde on October 30th. Okay, so Mars enters Gemini on August 20th, turns retrograde, comes to a standstill and turns retrograde on October 30th, and then starts moving backwards in the sky again. Okay, so it will retrograde all the way down to, I think it's like 8 degrees Gemini or something like that, where it will station direct. That basically means stop and pause. Okay, and it does that on January 12th, and then it starts moving forward again until Mars leaves the sign on March 25th, 2023. That's about 7 months of Mars being in the zodiac sign of Gemini. So we've already got this kind of like edgy flavor, you know, to sort of Mars in Gemini. But then when Mars turns retrograde, and this is what's really we need to pay attention to. Mars turns retrograde on October 30th, and then it retrogrades down to, I think it gets to about maybe like 8 degrees Gemini when it stations direct. And basically a station direct means like stand and pause. Okay, so it stops in the sky and then it starts moving forward again on January 12th. So Mars turns retrograde on October 30th. And it comes out of retrograde on January 12th. Now, what's really important about this retrograde, and it has to deal with any planet that's turning retrograde outside the Earth's orbit, is that any planet that is outside the Earth's orbit means that it's going to be opposite the sun in the sky. So in other words, I mean, if you think about it, Mars turns retrograde October 30th. That's the zodiac sign of Scorpio. It's retrograde Scorpio, Sagittarius, and then it comes out of retrograde in Capricorn. Okay. If you think of the sun being in Gemini, okay, and the sun opposite Gemini is Sagittarius. Okay, so this is the most challenging period of time for all of us in the year is when the sun is opposite our sun sign in the sky. So for Geminis in particular, this idea of Mars being in Gemini, but the sun being opposite your own zodiac sign, that's Scorpio, Sagittarius, where it's actually opposite, and then Capricorn, that's going to bring out a very strong oppositional flavor for anyone born under Gemini. And then, of course, for anyone born with Mars and Gemini in their chart, the sun passing through Scorpio, Sagittarius, and Capricorn is going to be a very difficult time. So what was kind of taken from this idea of opposition, was that a retrograde could also be oppositional. All right. So it wasn't just that a retrograde signified a planet moving backwards in the sky, but its nature could be oppositional. Okay. And that's where retrogrades kind of get their at times darker meaning. Sometimes they're seen as confounding or delaying, but sometimes they can really take on a kind of darker bent. And when you're sort of looking at the planetary energies that are going on from that period of October 30th to January 12th, Those are some very incendiary energies. Okay, so again, what I would sort of warn about during this period of time is this sort of like, what is it? It's not about your relationship to winning. It's about how you play the game. You know, are you playing fairly or are you playing unfairly? Are you keeping the rules or are you breaking the rules? Are you bending the rules in such a way to sort of press your advantage? You know, but not in a way that's kind of funny or fun, but in a way that's kind of malevolent. You know, this is the sort of thing that I want you to sort of think about, particularly from it's roughly Halloween to about, I don't know, I think it's Feast of something. It's the Three Wise Men's Feast or something like that in January. So that's that section of the year. And this is a period of time that I would very much warn you or caution you about. Again, it's not like Mars, like fire raining from heaven or you know, people storming the gates or something along those lines. There can be, even in something as simple and innocent as game playing, something that might take on a more malevolent flavor, or even a sort of cheating flavor. So that's something to very much keep your eye on. What you want to keep your eye on with something like that is that you're not being cheated in any sort of way or anything along those lines. But again, you know, to ask yourself, am I playing this game, you know, in a fun way, or am I playing this game with a bit of an edge, you know, to vanquish or to win? And if you are, ease up, you know. But it's more than that. It's, again, what can happen with Mars in this sign is that it's about, you know, playing to win and not really taking into effect how that might hurt someone or how that might harm someone or where it's gotten out of hand, and telling yourself at the end of the day, well, that's the way the game's played and they knew it coming on into the game and, you know, that's what happens. Let's face it, it's a bit heartless and it's not very kind. And it's kind of like mean-spirited and a bit cruel. And that gets back to that question that Cain asks, you know, after he's slain his brother, you know, am I my brother's keeper? You know, and of course the answer to that question is yes. Yes. Yes, you are your brother's keeper. You know, if you are expecting someone to keep you, you know, in other words, if you're expecting someone to look out after you or to safeguard you or to be on your side, then yes, you extend that same thing to the person that is your brother, your sister, the person that is your companion. And perhaps if we answered yes to that question, am I my brother's keeper, more often, then things would be much more fair and much more equitable in life. And perhaps this is the lesson that Mars, in its prolonged stay in the zodiac sign of Gemini, is trying to teach us.
Hi there. I'm Amy Escobar, a producer of the Horoscope Highlight Show with Christopher Renstrom. Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology Hub Podcast Network. If you love the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, review, and share it. And if you don't know how to do that, here's how you can leave a review in Apple Podcasts on iPhone. Make sure you're on the landing page for the Astrology Hub Podcast and not an individual episode. Scroll down to the bottom until you reach Ratings and Reviews. Click one of the 5 stars under Tap to Rate to leave a rating. And under the most recent review, tap the Write a Review button. And if you're on another device, just find out how to leave a review on whatever podcast player you use. Then share what you love about the show or how it helps you navigate your life. We'd love to hear your stories. And by doing this, you make it possible to make shows like Horoscope Highlights happen every week. Thank you again for tuning in, for being a part of our community, and for making astrology a part of your life.